As China raises the pressure on Taiwan, how are American businesses feeling about operating there? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Taiwan's defense ministry says China has today fired multiple ballistic missiles during a set of unprecedented military exercises around the self-governed island. The drills, in response to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit this week, have snarled shipping in some of the world's busiest waterways and affected flights to and from Taiwan. Southeast Asian foreign ministers meeting today warned growing tensions could spark open conflict in the region, and they've called for maximum restraint. Multinational businesses then on the island are no doubt keeping close tabs on the escalating tensions. Andrew Weiligala is president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Taiwan. He gives us a sense of how his more than 500-strong membership are reacting to what's happening on the ground in Taipei.
No one is panicking. This is a place that has lived with a certain level of tension and strain for decades now, and people are pretty well taking it in stride. Our members take the long view and have a fundamentally optimistic and bullish view about Taiwan, about the U.S.-Taiwan relationship. I think they recognize that we may be entering a more challenging period, so they now need to do contingency planning in a different way, to look at their timetables and the types of threats that are out there, which of course range across the spectrum of which a worst-case scenario, a full-on invasion, is probably the one that's still deemed quite unlikely, quite improbable. It's a relatively new development to notch up the tensions in this range. It's in no one's interest that we add tension onto the other economic headwinds that we're all already dealing with.
And you guys have been pushing for free trade talks between the U.S. and Taiwan. How do you think that will affect the current situation?
While we're very happy that the visit demonstrated this political support, what our members would really like is to see what the next step is. How do we move from this to concrete actions that benefit Taiwan-U.S. regional security? And for that, I think it's the idea that economic security business is really the greatest tool before us. And we haven't, while we've seen good trend lines and a lot of activity, we believe that that is really where the Biden administration, the U.S. Congress, and frankly, the Tsai administration have to up their game.
But do you worry about the potential response from China if the ties between the U.S. and Taiwan continue to deepen and how that could affect business on the island?
This is an area where the competition is good, right? And we have seen certainly other economic groupings that China has been a party to. There's, of course, there's the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. Both China and Taiwan are aspirants to the successor to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is a wonderful place for us to compete. And I think our point as a business organization is to say, while the military and defensive posture and preparedness is very important, it's really the far-reaching economic integration that can really change this. And it and is at basis a non-threatening route, because these are not exclusive agreements that we're talking about reaching.
Andrew Weiligala, the president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Taiwan. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Checking the numbers, global stocks are little changed today as investors turn their focus to corporate earnings and central bank policy. The British pound is near a five-month high against the euro ahead of what's expected to be an historic rate decision from the Bank of England. Policymakers in a couple of hours are forecast to raise interest rates by as much as half a percentage point to 1.75%. It would be the biggest increase since the central bank gained operational independence in 1997 and the sixth rate rise in a row. But former monetary policy committee member Andrew Sentence says the BOE is still behind the curve.
With inflation already up to nearly 9.5% and set to go probably into double digits later this year, people are now talking about a much larger increase this meeting than the quarter point steps we've had before. One of the challenges that the Bank of England faces is exactly knowing how people are going to behave when they have been in a period of such low interest rates for so long. And that's one of the reasons for their caution. But on the other hand, inflation has gone up so much, the cautious approach may not be sustainable for much longer.
That's Andrew Sentence, formerly of the Bank of England there. To Germany now, where fears of natural gas shortages are intensifying after Nord Stream 1 pipeline flows became just a fifth of capacity. Germany has accused Moscow of intentionally blocking gas deliveries, while Russia blames the reduction on technical problems. Whatever the reason, the BBC's Jenny Hill reports Germans are preparing for what could be a tough winter ahead.
The doors to the furnace slowly open, and inside all you can see is red, fiery space.
I've come to an aluminium foundry. Vladimir Putin knows Germany, and its industry relies on his gas. And the silvery, molten metal pouring from the furnace here flows down through vital supply chains, cars, medical equipment, wind turbines. But no one can rule out shortages this winter.
So we take out every bit of energy that we can, right?
Rob van Gils not only runs Hammerer Aluminium Industries, he also represents the German Aluminium Association.
Honestly, if they cut energy, there is no real contingency plan. The only thing you can do is then to prioritize and to, let's say, allocate the capacity that you could still run to the most important markets where you think the damage to the society is the biggest, right?
So you cut back on production.
That's the only way.
Russia blames technical problems and a German-maintained turbine for reducing its gas supply. Earlier, Olaf Scholz visited the Siemens factory to see the turbine for himself. It's working fine, he said, and Russia was blocking its return.
Es gibt also keine Gründe.
Mr. Scholz is in a tricky position. He'd promised to phase out coal and end nuclear power. He's having to rethink those pledges now.
Was die Energieversorgung in Deutschland betrifft,
Germany's last three remaining nuclear power stations, he said, only produce electricity and only a small amount. Nevertheless, he added, it could make sense to keep them going.
Aber trotzdem kann das Sinn machen.
It would be a huge political compromise, not least for Germany's Green Party, who are in the coalition government and for whom nuclear energy is anathema. In the nearby town of Landshut, its streets colourful with old painted houses, they're painfully aware that Germany doesn't yet have enough gas stored for the winter.
Natürlich beschäftigt das Tropenschutzplänen.
Alexander Putz is the mayor.
Wenn die Gasversorgung zusammenbrechen,
we're preparing for disaster management. Should the gas supply break down, energy-intensive industries would be the first to be taken off the supply grid, which would have catastrophic consequences for industry in our region.
Vladimir Putin may not yet have triggered the economic and political turmoil he'd no doubt like to unleash in the heart of Europe, but he is forcing governments, like Germany's, into difficult decisions and uncomfortable choices.
That's Jenny Hill in Landshut, Bavaria there, and in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.